Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, where we discuss the latest DevOps news, AWS announcements, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our SweetOps community, plus a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. It's July 2nd, 2025, and I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. Cloud Posse sells AWS reference architectures that help you get production ready in a matter of just 2 weeks. So if you're curious to learn more, go to cloudposse.com. Now, how can you maximize today's session? First off, our format is very informal and you can engage as much as you'd like, ask questions. And for those curious about any of our open source tools like Atmos, this is a great place to ask. For those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. Join us by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours. Now, I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's session valuable, share it with your team. We're going to be posting a recording of this session to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/cloudposse in a couple hours after this session. With that said, let's get into some news and announcements. That's what I was going to do. So I totally saw this announcement and I totally did not look at it because we are totally not using runs on controller anymore. But for those still using the runs on controller and subjecting yourself to all that grief of scaling Kubernetes clusters and Arc pools and all the runner profiles for your GitHub actions, then this is probably good news for you. The releases of Actions Runner Controller have been very slow. It's only at a 0.12 pre 1.0 Semver, so still technically not, stable interface, and that's I guess why we had so much grief. So anyone look into this one can tell me what the news is, even though it was my news. All right. If you're so the runson.com is what we've been using for the last year, and it's really awesome. So easy. CloudFormation template you deploy, fully no SaaS component, fully self-hosted, and just make self-hosting GitHub action runners a breeze. So check them out. All right, next. Here's that time of office hours where I get signed out of this. Hold on 1 second. Okay, so next announcement was really minor. Anyways, BSOD, blue screen of death, is going to be the black screen of death to join the times and be undifferentiated from Linux and every other system, I guess. So they're getting rid of the blue screen that's been around forever. No more sad face. Unfortunately, they're not getting to the root problem of that, so we'll still be seeing black screens of death. Another announcement that doesn't feel like an announcement anymore, and I guess this is going to my Apple news, and I can't really share it. Anyways, yeah, Brother printers are remotely exploitable and can open up TCP tunnels to anything on your network, and like every model of the printer is basically vulnerable, so, and it's apparently unpatchable. So. It doesn't get better than that. Matt, are you here? You shared this one with me. He did not join today, so I'm less familiar with this announcement. DynamoDB introduced global tables a few years back. Now they've introduced support for strong consistency, not eventual consistency of those tables. So interesting how they do that, but I don't have more about it. Anyone know more about this announcement? All right. This is pretty cool. Anybody working on refactoring your Teralithic root modules, what we call components, into smaller components, smaller pieces, would benefit from this. TF State Move is a CLI. You can install it through Homebrew, and it allows you to literally move state between state backends, state files. And they go through how to do that. It's also kind of neat because they make it easy with a text UI, as you can see in this demo here. Well, it's not. Oh, there it goes. Let me make that a little bigger. So you can see that it's a text UI. You can select the resources that you want to transfer to a new state file, and then it creates that state file for you. You can import it. I haven't heard anybody speak up yet. Can you guys hear me okay?
I can hear you.
Yep,
All
we
right.
hear
Yeah,
you loud and clear.
Yeah.
all right. Just not striking a chord yet. All right, let's see what else I got here. This was interesting. Kubernetes, which is like the largest Slack community. I know it was up to 30, 40,000, and that was years ago. So I can only imagine how large the Slack community is today. They had originally gotten the boot from Salesforce that Salesforce was going to stop to host that Slack workspace for free. They've since worked out an arrangement, I think, where that won't be happening at least right away, but they will still probably be moving off, it sounded like. The update was that they will not be downgraded on June 20th, but stand by for more details. I know for SweetOps, tried for many, many years to see if we could get any love from Salesforce and better pricing, but it did not exist. So I was hoping that Slack would eventually offer a feasible solution for communities. However, that never happened. So I guess all the more reason to move to Discourse or some other platforms. Just hurts when you have all the history, right? Over it, we have 10 years of Slack history. And well, okay, we used to have 10 years of Slack history. Now they, as of J June 27th, they have killed 90, or they've killed everything but 90 days of that history. Fortunately, we do have an archive of that somewhere. All right. Any thoughts on this before we move on?
It really seems like there are just the two alternatives. Either you're on Slack or Discord. And I'm curious, is there any other alternatives which might not be as popular but still usable and not IRC?
I know,
Yeah.
I hear of teams using Matrix. Matrix.
Ooh.
I'm not
Is that the
familiar
one that's renamed to element.io? Or no, is that different?
with that. I just know it's a Slack-like. And I'm trying to remember, I just last week saw a dev team that had that listed.
This is interesting. I've never seen Google produce this list of alternatives at the top before.
Yeah, one comment on the Zulip app. I don't know if anybody here listens to the Changelog podcast or their family of podcasts, but they moved wholesale from Slack to Zulip. And they actually had an episode where they had the, I don't know if it was the creator of Zulip or one of the contributors to the project, but they had a podcast episode where they talked at length about Zulip, moving from Slack to Zulip. And just recently, they pretty much, I won't say abandoned, but kind of archive their Slack community, and now all of their activity is taking place on Zulip.
Interesting. The biggest pain I see with all these platforms is they don't provide a way to import messages while preserving like attribution to authors and dates. The hack is always, well, you just put the author in the message and you put the date in the message, but that's not the same thing. And it precludes any sort of date filtering and so forth.
Oh, that's right. I see it now. Warp Forge
is still running. They're just doing a Rust rewrite right now. And they say, join our channel in Matrix.
Warpforge.
Yeah, I'll put the case folks are still following them.
Yeah, what was that? I think you introduced us to Warpforge originally.
Yeah, I still follow them. The rewrite is just not going quick, but they seem to still be active because they're moving from Go to Rust.
But what was it? I don't even remember what it was.
Kind of a package manager that lets you take the build process and create almost a Git-like build environment. So you can take a binary and fork it and change some part of it. So it's still, you can have distinct glibc versions on, say, one particular binary, and then you can merge those binaries, and the merge process is just merging the build steps.
Got it. Interesting. Would that be almost like taking what you get with Dagger and bundling it with the artifact so it's like a self-contained, reproducible?
I think of it similar to Nixos,
Or yeah,
because
Nixon.
you know there's an absolute checksum to every binary, and it should not be possible to build that without the checksum changing. If you make changes, you change the binary's hash.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. And Michael, you said you're in a few communities that use Element.
Yeah, forward email is a pretty big one. They're open source, email forwarding, and they use Element, a very, very nice interface for that.
And it's free for communities?
I believe so. I'm not super, I've just used it,
Yeah.
never ran it.
Yeah.
What is the pricing say on the top?
Oh, look at this, using the Matrix Open Standard. So that seems to build on what Jeremy White was saying about Matrix. So is Matrix an open standard, and then you have these systems that play into that?
I'm
I
actually
believe.
looking it up. I don't know for sure. I think matrix.io is what I was looking at.
Yeah. What were you saying, Rishabh?
I believe it does, and I can't think of it, but there is another social media, I think, also using Matrix. I can't remember if it's Blue Sky or another one.
This looks different. Yeah, matrix.io. Oh no, matrix.io was a different link. I'm sorry. Too many tabs. Too many tabs.
So Rocket Chat is also this Matrix Federation ready. So that's interesting. Matrix.org is, I think, maybe Open Network for Secure Decentralized Communication. And then you have these systems like Rocket Chat and Elements.io that support that. Ah, I did not know about that. I wonder if that gives you any portability between those systems, like to move, or your chat history is still tied. All right, well, learn something new. Thank you for that. The last non-announcement is desperately looking for announcements, trying to find something exciting on the GitHub roadmap, and realizing how boring the GitHub roadmap has gotten, I guess, as all of their attention has shifted towards AI. But supposedly immutable actions are still happening end of Q4. And then a totally tone-deaf thing coming that I was almost super excited until I realized that, wait, no, they're not talking about the GitHub tokens. The most annoying thing on GitHub is that the GitHub tokens themselves are only the claim is only for the current working repository, and they don't work across other repositories, even internal repositories inside your organization. I don't see where this is. I saw that something about Pat support for Pat's working across repos, internal repos in an organization was coming, but personal access tokens are not very exciting. I have no trouble accessing GitHub repositories, so that announcement doesn't excite me. But some form of automated way to access multiple repositories within inside of GitHub would be very nice. We talked about a GitHub app that can do that. I just forget what it was called. Oh well. All right, that's all I got. Oh, we got one more small announcements. If you are using Cloud Posse's components, so these are Cloud Posse's Terraform components. These are root modules, part of our commercial reference architecture. We recently went through and fixed the provider pinning on all of these. And just in case it's interesting for others to learn. So we have some contrarian positions on version pinning for providers on Terraform child modules. And that is, we don't do upper bound pinning on child modules because we are unable then to test updates in a new pull request, bumping the provider without bumping every other child module first that depends on. And that creates a very complex upgrade path for updating providers. So we learned this years and years ago. I mean, this is like 5, 7 years ago or something. So we only do lower bound pinning. However, we mistakenly took the same approach with our components, which was only doing lower bound pinning on our components because, well, we just kind of went on autopilot with what we've doing with our child modules. Well, components are root modules, and those are the opinionated implementation of child modules, and those should, those shouldn't care too much what the underlying provider versions are, because you never embed a component inside of another component. You embed components inside of a stack. And for that reason, we went ahead and went through all of our hundreds of components. Yes, we used, I forget if it was Cursor or Claude, and updated all of the components to do upper bound pinning on the components. And that's because the AWS provider v6 introduced some breaking changes that we haven't yet updated throughout our entire child module ecosystem. So I guess it's in versions.tf here. So this is what we added. So all versions less than 6. Similar breaking changes came out in Helm. So we did similar upper bound pinning in any of our components that use Helm. And then we will update those as time passes. Any questions on our version pinning strategy for child modules and root modules components? Rishabh, were you going to say something?
I was, but it's not entirely helpful. I was just going to say, could you go over that again? Because I caught the first half and I understood the reasoning of it made sense in the larger case, but it doesn't make sense for components because when you're looking for an upgrade path, you need to have some way of pulling in the latest modules to test it before you can pin it.
Yeah.
So what was your resolution again? Sorry.
So the rest of, well, so our resolution, so in our components, we generally didn't have upper bound pinning like this, but that meant when a new version of the AWS provider dropped, this component stopped working. So what we did is we pin it now in the root module to be less than, so basically v5 of the AWS provider.
Gotcha.
And that is fine because we don't play this game where we have to update the other three modules that are in the dependency chain before we can update this one. This allows us to keep the pinning in one place rather than keep the upper bound pinning in four places.
Gotcha, with you, because this cascades down to nested modules.
Exactly, yeah.
Nice. Okay.
So it's just a practical thing we've learned. And while the engineer who did it did not use this command, this would have been a perfect application of HCL edit. Oops, what happened there? HCL edit. This one here. And this allows you to very easily rewrite any part of a Terraform HCL file. So if you need to do bulk edits, this is the tool. Well, let's see, anything else interesting in the chat? Element, matrix spec, Mattermost. Yeah, Jim says time to bring back Slack. I mean, sorry, time to bring back IRC in place of Slack. You know, in 2020 hindsight, right? And unfortunately, I'm having trouble with my Zoom. I can't scroll up, it just keeps returning back to the bottom of the window in typical Zoom fashion. All right. Any other questions? So yeah, let's move into just general Q&A here. Those were all the announcements I had. Anyone spot something interesting this week that we can discuss?
I mean, for the sake of filling dead air, I came across a video today that highlighted a Git repo called Build Your Own X, and I'll share the link in the chat here. But it was pretty cool because and I haven't gone through all the projects yet here, but if you're learning how to build lower level systems using software, it gave a lot of demonstrations, like build your own Docker, you know, basically a Linux container type thing. Build your own 3D renderer. And then what I appreciated is they have these different projects, but they also have it broken out by language. So you don't have to necessarily subscribe to C++ or Java, or they had like Python options and JavaScript options and so on. Even had like a Zig option. I have no clue what Zig is, other than it was used for, what, Ghosty, the terminal that Mitchell Hashimoto wrote. So I was kind of curious about, you know, just doing a Zig project. But anyway, yeah, I just came across this and thought it was something interesting to share.
Interesting. What was that other? Maybe you shared it. There was another one that was more AI driven that automatically cr came up with like a full documentation site based on.
Yeah, that's if you hadn't said it, I would have been able to recall it. But no,
Totally.
it's roadmap.sh is the website. And so historically they had like handcrafted roadmaps for building skills for particular roles or careers or whatever. And now they've really expanded the platform where you can make your own roadmaps. And they also have like AI generated roadmaps that kind of use this format that they have. It's pretty slick, even from when it was just like, you know, they were doing it all by hand. It was really, you know, still a pretty cool tool that way.
That is interesting. Yeah, and I remember this one was shared, and yet there was another one I was still thinking of. It was not this one. But it generated the like the technical documentation for any repository. So, all right. Miguel said he used that roadmaps SH a lot. Any other questions or interesting things we can discuss today?
I see there's a question in the chat from a certain Hunter Broxton wondering if the Atmos executable is allowed in FedRAMP environments.
Oh, that's a good question. Well, we have a customer that is using Atmos to deploy architectures. I forget the, it's one of the highest levels of compliance, government compliance, and they are using Atmos, but I don't know specifically.
Top
And
secret.
it's not that I literally just I can't remember the standard. Yeah, they were very excited. They said, according to them, they said they're one of like 2% of people that pass that certification every year, and they were able to get it. The other cases, I believe I've seen some people maybe at defense unicorns using Atmos, but I don't know to what extent. So defense unicorns, they're a pretty cool company. They are similar to Cloud Posse, but they specialize in government specifically. They have one of their own tools called Snarf, I think, which helps you run in air-gapped environments. And I think I've seen some interest in them lately using Atmos, but not 100% sure. Hunter, if yeah, we Cloud Posse doesn't do personally that much work, or does Cloud Posse has not done government contracts or work in FedRAMP or GovCloud environments personally. So it's hard for me to answer that question. But if you could tell me the kind of characteristics of some app, what are the requirements needed to operate in an environment like that, then I could probably answer that.
A little earlier, when we were looking at GitHub's boring roadmap ahead, you mentioned PAT was one of the things that would be nice so you could check out repositories, not your own, within workflows without having to use hard-coded PIATs or secrets.
Yeah.
How do you solve that currently? How do you address that?
Well, what we do, it's ugly and it feels like such a Rube Goldberg apparatus. What we do is we create a GitHub app and we install the GitHub app in each repository that we needed to have access to. And then we scope the permissions to that. Then we use the GitHub environment secrets, which are a GitHub enterprise feature, to restrict to restrict access to the GitHub app to specific branches. But that doesn't really help if you want to do any kind of preview environments or things that are happening at the pull request phase, because they'll still need access to the secrets, and that means you either need two apps or that definitely need a token that is narrowly scoped. I really wish I remember what that app was for creating scope. It actually came up last week on a customer call, so I'm going to look it up. There is a GitHub app you can install that works like STS, but for GitHub access tokens. And it's by a third-party security company, and the app itself is free.
Is it Octo STS? Linked it in the chat.
Is it that one?
Because this is the one we were looking at earlier to solve the exact same thing of how do we get one repo to check out another. And it looks like these guys Octo STS.
That might be it. Let me see if it's in the. I don't know if we talked about it in the last 90 days, but let's see if it's in the Sweet Ops Slack. And that was it. Octo STS. It didn't come up there.
Oh, maybe it would help to use the blog article. So even though Okta STS is its own thing, the security company behind it is
Yes, it
changing.
was ChainGuard. Yes, it was then. Absolutely. Yeah, we talked about ChainGuard is what it was. Yeah.
Saving like.
Yeah, I guess it was still over 90 days ago. It's still not showing up for me in the Slack history. But yeah, that was them, I remember. Yeah. So how far did you get in your evaluation on that?
As far as it looks good, but no one's no one has time to try it out for themselves. But no, this is something that we are actually really keen to try because it just looks like the ideal scenario. Just like we have AWS's configure credentials, you give it some access permissions and you let it pull from anything. It looks like the same here. But what it's worth noting is you mentioned having to install an app for each repo. This does ha seem to have a similar drawback. Every single repo has to have a specific file, which tells it that you can be checked out from another repo. So there is something you do have to do, but at least it's checked in code. It's not something that's purely UI.
So it's GitOps friendly.
That's right.
And my recollection was you could self, this is open source, you could self-host it, but they also, I thought they offered a hosted version of it. But I don't see that anymore. Yeah, here, you can install this app here. So they offer a hosted one, which is interesting because then, I mean, obviously it's a lot of trust you put in that service, but I guess it's one way you can test it out in a test GitHub organization maybe.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And they are pretty upfront about it as well, saying that yes, we need a superset of all the permissions that we can divvy out. So effectively, we need admin permissions. But in practical use, the only permission we use is content read only to read the file.
Yeah.
It is nice, though, when you look at the documentation, they use pinned action tags even in the documentation. That's a level of detail that not a lot of GitHub action authors go through.
Yes, Zarf is that other tool for the air-gapped environments. Looks pretty interesting as well. I know that it's also open source, creates SBOMs. Hunter, are you were you aware of Zarf, or were you just sharing it because I mentioned it earlier? I'm having a conversation with a chat, so that's why you're not hearing anything back. All right. All right. Anything else we could talk about today? Thanks for bringing up that Octo SCS. That was perfect because I literally needed to pull that up. I couldn't remember what it was called. Right. Well, if nothing else, maybe we wrap things up a little bit early today. I think with it being July 4th this week, less newsworthy announcements came up.
And Canada Day yesterday.
All right. Thanks everyone for your time today. Sorry we couldn't fill out the full hour, but we will be back next week at the same time, same place. Remember to write down your questions for next week. We'll be posting a recording of today's session to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/cloudposse. If you're ever interested in getting some help from Cloud Posse, you can go to cloudposse.com/support and see what options we have available. And if you want to get more involved with our community, we have lots of options. Make sure you register for our weekly office hours. Just submit your email here and you'll get an invitation to these live weekly sessions. And our Slack community, which is very heavily AWS, Terraform, GitHub Actions focused. So a great place to ask questions there. Obviously, Atmos too. If you haven't checked out Atmos, check that out. Our YouTube channel for all the back episodes of our office hours. And if you ever want to book a session with me, just go to cloudposse.com/meet and I'll talk to you soon. All right, have a great week and happy 4th.